Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate.
Now listen to this.
Lack of a better word. Metropolitans have returned to Earth, crashing back to Earth, trailing the Florida Marlins 5-1, as I flip channels here, and live here on the show. Looks like two outs in the sixth, as the Mets trail by four, as they make a hero out of Ricky Nolasco. Ugh. So the ethers of Monday are dissipating fast from Citi Field as the fans are streaming from the ballpark before the seventh inning stretch. John Maine and EXO on an EXO Wednesday getting tattooed. A couple of long home runs, a couple of bullets into the outfield, and away he goes. And it was a 1-1 game early. And he was giving up hits, but not runs. And then all of a sudden, the moonshot started to come. So a little two-out walk here. We're going to... We might dip into this a little bit in a half hour when we get our astute guest from the Sapevine, Mike Silva, to join us on the air. That aside, there is another game going on up in Boston, which at last look was a close game, closer than this one. Let's see. Boston was up 1-0, and ooh, looks like it was safe at first. Anyway. That series is tied 1-1 as they're playing the third game tonight up there in the Fenway Park. And the Red Sox were hitting, I think this was only the fifth inning, though. And so, welcome to the show, Summertime. Again, the number to call to dial in to participate tonight is 646-478-4847. 646-478-4847. Yeah, 1-0 Boston in the sixth there as they hit with one on and no outs here. And they're in the bullpen, the Yankee bullpen. Is that headed still? I think it is still Pettit. Yeah, he's still in there. But they changed. Anyway, the real story, though, dun-dun-dun, is down at Madison Square Garden, where the New York Rangers, as we get Sam up here, are about to put the finishing touches on a nice 3-0 win here. 14 minutes to go in the third. The Rangers are leading the Leafs 3-0. As they set up a Friday, almost scored. Almost got a live goal for you. A Friday-Sunday face down with Philadelphia. Oh, it's always Philadelphia. So we're going to be doing sports tonight, in case you haven't known. If you haven't checked the preview, I didn't even get a chance to Facebook it yet. I'm gonna actually do three things at once. I'm going to be Facebooking that I'm on the air. And it's a craziness tonight. We had a guest coming on at 9:30 to sort through a lot of this controversy about what's gone on in the sports talk kingdom in the last little while here since social media got in the room. And we're looking at some of these stories because there's so much going on this week in sports that really is not so much sports as it is just pop culture at this point. We're going to go through a couple of stories here and kind of get your appetite wet for the discussion, because I want to get you guys to react a little bit tonight and give me your opinion about it, because a lot of the stuff that's gone on in the last 3 or 4 days even in sports. Tigers talk on Monday. Now there's a new Nike ad I'm going to play for you with his father's voice scolding him, and he's looking all disciplined and, you know, broken in the picture. It's amazing what's going on with Tiger. He has become his own cottage industry. I mean, you literally can almost the weather could be an excuse to talk Tiger. So we'll get into that. And, of course, not too far from Tiger's neck of the woods, so to speak, is our friend Tiki Barber, former Giant, who is in another one of these scandals. It just goes on and on. It really has become sort of like the daily grind, so to speak, as athlete after athlete is actually sort of, what's the word, indoctrinated into the TMZ culture. The politicians got tired, so the athletes are back. You know, so let me start off with the Tiger ad, because it follows up with this talk last night. I don't know if you guys caught this, but the guy that runs the tournament over there, Billy Payne. Okay, they had a little dinner last night. He's the chairman of Augusta. I gotta find this before we got the air. I gotta put that on my list. Let me put that on my list. Gotta find the Caddyshack clip. See, this is what I should be doing all afternoon before I get on the air, but I don't, because I'm a sloppy eco. All right, so let's see. I'm opening up the chat room early, in case any of you New York Baseball Digest types are around. They want to talk. Oh, it's 3-1, Rangers. Don't go home yet, Garden faithful. Well, they've been begging for this 3-1 score for about half an hour now. So the Leafs are pesky. Pesky. The pesky pull. Look at that. Lundqvist will give up a cheap goal no matter what game it's in. Here's another shot from the blue line. Right in. Unbelievable. All right, so back to this Billy Payne story. Surprised media members during his annual pre-Masters press conference by taking Woods to the woodshed. His quote, "It is not simply the degree of his conduct that is so egregious here. It is the fact that he disappointed all of us, and more importantly, our kids and grandkids." It does sound like what's his name from Caddyshack, Ted Knight. "Our hero did not live up to the expectations as a role model that we sought for our children." All right. "As he ascended in our rankings of the world's great golfers, he became an example to our kids. But he now says himself he forgot in the process to remember that with fame, fortune, comes responsibility, not invisibility." Maybe that wasn't one of his superpowers. I don't know. But he continues, "Is there a way forward? I hope yes, I think yes, but certainly his future will never again be measured only by his performance against par, but by the sincerity of his efforts to change. We at Augusta hope and pray that our great champion will begin his new life here tomorrow in a positive, hopeful, and constructive manner, but this time with a significant difference from his past. This year, it will not be just for him, but for all of us who believe in second chances." He closes with, "The tens of millions of dollars we have contributed," I guess it's the real skinny here, "the tens of millions of dollars we have contributed to the growth of the game through the years, I think, has certainly helped both men's and women's golf. It's a membership kind of issue, as you know, those are subject to private deliberations of the members." Talking about women getting into Augusta. So Mr. Progressive, he's judge and jury here. They don't even have women golf there, and blacks, you know, unless you're Tiger, good luck. So a little hypocrisy from the golf world. That's one of my favorite sports for hypocrisy. So let's see if I can find this Nike ad here and play it for you quick, because it really is. It's his dad talking. Now, you know, his dad was guilty of infidelity just as much as, not on the scale of Tiger. Maybe he was, a little different animal. But check this out. This is a 30-second commercial from Nike. All right, now, the picture I'll give you, you can see it on YouTube. It's just punching Earl and Tiger. It's Tiger looking like his father's, like, scolding him. He's in his little golf hat and his little Nike shirt. And this is what his father's telling him. It's amazing.
Tiger, I am more prone to be inquisitive, to promote discussion. I want to find out what your thinking was. I want to find out what your feelings are. And did you learn anything?
Yeah, Earl Woods there from Beyond the Grave. I'm sure talking about golf.
Tiger?
Tiger? It's just too nutty. And if you just see his face, he's just like, this is the ultimate. I mean, did they come up with this thing when he was in therapy to bring back the voice of his deceased father, who Tiger had issues with over his father's own infidelity? I mean, this is nuts. Nuts. That this is, I hate to say that, but it's just, I don't know. Maybe we're all on Prozac and I'm not aware of it. But that's an example of this culture line that sports has now become, like entertainment, like politics, like just about every other major thing in the culture. It you can't separate the two. The on-field, off-field thing doesn't work anymore, as this Billy Payne guy is demonstrating. We're not going to judge Tiger on how good a golfer he is anymore. We're going to see if he represents us. It's almost like a corporation saying, you know, we're going to evoke our morals clause. The immoral corporation has a morals clause. So, you know, we're not going to let women or blacks golf here, but, you know, if you fool around and we know about it, you know, we can't have that image on our screen because he won't sell commercials. But the Masters didn't care about commercials. They just care about the Masters. Very strange. So there's the Tiger thing. Get the Tiki here in a second. But it's just something that bothers me, that the hypocrisy of it all, that these organizations, these teams, will pay these guys millions of dollars to basically, you know, perform for them. And then if they don't meet their standards for whatever reason, they're looked at and judged almost as if they're held to a different standard than everybody else. Because, tell you the truth, hey, we got a goal. Hang on a second. 4-1 Rangers. All right. Bury him. As sports leak, rears its ugly head again. Anyway, where was I? Yeah. If we use the same standards to judge athletes and on the elite level like this, I mean, we just went to the Olympics with it. There's so much phoniness to it that it's almost like, as an audience, as a fan base, we have almost got amnesia to think that we can't, you know, connect the dots. Like, do they really think that we don't understand that we look at sports as a diversion? We don't really care what he's up to, as long as he's not, you know, hurting children or animals or anything like that. You know, we're not going to animals. Michael Vick. We're pretty much going to accept him at face value as a golfer. To get, you know, like, to go back to the Charles Barkley concept of I'm not a role model is really true. I'm on that side of the fence with that. I don't understand why we require these guys to be, you know, sort of angels when they're paid to be ruthless killers on the field. I mean, they really are, especially the football guys. Forget about it. And that's why it just seems disingenuous. Anyway, that's the controversy with him. Now I want to look up the Tiki one as I scan around here, because the Tiki thing, I might have to go to TMZ for this. I might actually go to TMZ. Let's go to TMZ. We're almost there anyway. Might as well go there. TMZ. The Culture. And a click. Yeah, I mean, you got Jessica Simpson not wearing makeup. Oh, that's news. So you go across the TMZ, nav bar here. And sports is now one of the things you can just go right to. Of course, the thing on the homepage is about Tiger. Just, you know, you could just write Tiger anywhere and the eyeballs will follow. But, let's see if I can get this to type. Wait a minute. Did we just get another goal? I didn't even see that. Moros, the goon, with a goal. All right. The party is on. We will see you Friday night, Philadelphia. Very nice. It's our song, guys. I could have gone to this game with my dentist. I'm here talking to you guys. Nice goal. Bang, bang, right in front. This line, this fourth line. Oh, look at that. Hey, 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 hey. See, that's it. It's an outlet. So anyway, back to, as I sip around the web as I'm talking to you here. Okay, let's see. Is this the sports section now? Yeah, okay, there's Tiger. And if you haven't heard, Ben Roethlisberger's case is in the DA's hands right now. So there's the update on that down in Georgia. So the DA will now decide if the charges are filed against him. And that sexual, what are they calling it? Sexual assault. It's a weird word. All right, let's see. So we're looking for Tiki here. Got to be in here because it was all over the news this morning, especially in New York here. Is Elon in Sweden? Very nice. It's about six Tiger stories here. Scrolling through, weapons charge for an NFL guy, Antonio Pierce gunning for ESPN gig. That's not gonna help me out. Where the heck is Tiki? Tiki must be in another section. He's not in the sports section. I don't see him. We're going to have to do a search on TMZ. Let's see. The search for Tiki. Tiki Bob. All right. While that's happening, we'll take a little flip down to Boston. Looks like a commercial there. This is what I do every night, folks, without the radio show. I'm watching like three games at once. Commercial on the Met game, too. All right, so we'll get a score there soon. Not going to bother with the Knicks. All right, so let's see. Doesn't seem to be a big deal over on... it just says cheating scandal, pregnant wife. Okay. In case you haven't, you don't know who Tiki Barber is, former Giant, crossed over to the Today Show, and... implicated in a huge scandal this morning with his wife and one of his interns. If I could just find it here. This is really annoying. The heck did it go? All right. I'm now disappointed that he's not important enough to make TMZ. I got to go back to Yahoo to get this. See if I'm missing any fascinating phone calls over here while I'm talking to you guys. Nobody, right? Yeah. Nobody in the chat room. Philippi's alone in the world. Let's see. But anyway, it's very simple, really. It's not that, you need like a scoreboard here. Old Tiki basically is leaving his wife for a 23-year-old intern. Now, I want to get the scoop, and I can't believe TMZ is not all over this. What is the problem? I'm putting in Tiki Barber. I don't care about his brother. I don't care about that. Okay, secret girlfriend. There it is. Ugh. This is annoying. This probably would have took me 10 minutes, but now that I'm on the air... All right. NFL's latest cheating scandal. One of accounts is from gather.com. All right, there's the young lady in question. Let's see. Leaving his wife of 11 years, Jeannie Barber, former ESPN or NBC intern, Tracy Lynn Johnson, the three-name woman. Jeannie, by the way, is 8 months pregnant with twins. Okay, folks, this is from the article, not me. Yes, he cheated on his pregnant wife with twins. What was he thinking? He didn't have Earl Woods talking to him, apparently. It's one thing if you talk out the problems of marriage, but running around behind your spouse's back is cowardly. This is their editorial. Barbara was hired by NBC in 2007. Well, she's 23. She's an intern. She's working for nothing. There's no quote. Let's see. This term, his own father. Again, the father cheated on the mother with Tiki. 2004, he says, I don't give a bleep that their relationship didn't work. Not only did he abandon her, I felt like he abandoned us for a lot of our lives. I have a hard time forgiving that. This is 2004. He's got two other sons. His wife's Asian woman. Looks, he's an onto, she's an exo. Didn't work. But it is wild that this story is just, kind of local. I thought it would be, I guess to get attention this week, it almost have to, fall down a mine in West Virginia or something. Wow. Unbelievable. So that's the Tiki story. And again, this is goes to the whole thing of the role model thing. Ben Roethlisberger, Super Bowl MVP, Tiki Barber, pretty decorated NFL veteran himself. All these guys. We've dealt with A-Rod in the past, people like that. Why would you ever, in your right freaking mind, take your cues for social behavior from jocks, from athletes? So, So that's the second story. And let's see, I'm losing my place here. Oh, Fantasyland! Yes, we're gonna get into that in a couple minutes with our friend Mike here, but I watched this thing the other night, a documentary about the god-awful world of fantasy baseball. And there's this thing called the Tout Wars. Google that. But the movie itself tracks this, basically this day trader guy who gets included in with these other guys. Let me see if I could find... and is given, kind of carte blanche to the inner circle of this realm of very, very highly renowned fantasy baseball players, which is, it's like being the tallest midget. It doesn't impress me that you could pick up a bunch of stats and track people. But it's a huge industry. That's the point I'm making. We're going to get to it a little more with Mike here in a minute. But it does have a somatic angle here, because it's one of these things that just stood out to me when watching some of the early parts of the movie, of how unbelievably invested these guys are in these fantasy leagues. And most of them, on the higher level, have nothing to do with money. It has everything to do with self-worth. And this is where that social media thing, where you can, sort of disassociate yourself from the interaction and just focus on information and make that information meaningful. And, we'll get into that with Mike a little bit, because it's just got a lot going on that I just found. See if I can get the, let's see, here's a clip from that's called The Naysayers, that features our friend Mikey Francesa here. So I'll play that for you. But the movie's called FantasylandFilm.com is the site. And here's a bunch of old guys trying to figure out why people are obsessed with this stuff. And I actually found myself agreeing with it. So let's see. We'll play that clip here quick.
I did contest the whole process and the whole philosophy, I think it's ridiculous.
It's foolish. It just seems like smart people spending too much time on a stupid endeavor.
It used to be that people rooted for a team, but now with the development of fantasy baseball, people are rooting for individual players.
They've made geeks and anal retentive stat chasers out of fans. They've changed the way they watch the game.
If they have a player on a last place team, and that player gets four hits that day, and that team loses the 100th game, they cheer like mad because their guy got his four hits.
Can you ever take a kid to a game and not be thinking about your stats and who do I got, and looking at the school board, scoreboard, or checking your iPhone to see what happened in the Pittsburgh-Detroit game and wondering what the stats are on there? I like the games. I like the strategy. I like the sports for themselves. Watch the game. Enjoy the game. Get a life.
You know, there has to be something more to life than baseball statistics.
I've seen people go off a deep end over everything from fantasy baseball to eating pudding, and I understand it, but I don't understand it.
All right, so there you go. There's the clip there for the movie that I kind of took their position on it, is that I cannot understand how you could take a love of a sport, baseball, whatever it is, football, and reduce it to this. And then this guy Jed that they track during the whole movie is just such a perfect, sort of a test case of how far and how, you know, involved these guys get. Well, he was hopping on planes to visit his team, the players, you know, who out of the batting cage. You're on the Jedi Knights, and you, what? You nuts? But, it was just like, again, we'll get into more with Mike when he gets here, but it was just one of those things that I was just fascinated with within the structure of the game, of the movie, that you could actually see how these guys get obsessed and how they fall down the cracks of the sidewalk and disappear into these stats. And you know, stats has become a huge part of analyzing performance, too. Another aspect of what we're going to get into tonight is how important those things. Where's the human aspect of the game? Like I said, the one extreme is the gossip end of it, and the other extreme is the geek end of it. Where's the game? I'm watching three games at once here, and I'm fascinated with, you know, the range of emotions I'll go through, because the Rangers are sewing up this one here, 5-1. They got this thing in the hip pocket. So we go back to Citi Field, where it was just a dismal night because of John Main. And let's see what's going on over here. Looks like it's 6-1, but the Mets have a little rally going here.
Well,
the pitcher in the last, so yep, the city is on it. Perfect slider. 6-1, 7th inning. Mets trying to chip into this 5-run deficit here. Nobody out, 2-2 to Frankie. Frank Hoo, the former Brave. Looks like we got into their bullpen, though. So let's see if the Mets can do something here. I think this is going to be the theme of the year. Can the Mets actually come back at some of these games? So now it's 3-2. Need some runners. Better get your last beers there. They'll be closing the stands there at the Citi Field here at the end of the inning. Oh, there's still a starter in there. God, I get these people's numbers.
There you go. 3-2 to Frank Gore.
Oh, look at this. Force play, first and third. All right, well, if we get any runs, I'll let you know. But anyway, it's what it is. It's the second game of the year, and I have this feel tonight that we're gonna come back and make this close. I just don't have any sense of the Marlin bullpen yet. I can't even concentrate right now. I'm so freaked out. So we got the Rangers to Friday, and we've got the Mets here basically returning to Earth. And let me just go back and check the Yankees here quick. So we should hear from Mike here in a second. Then we get into some real controversy and some conversation. You guys can call me up here, get your 2 cents in. What do you think of Tiger? What do you think what's going on? I see Mikey's there. I'm going to switch back to Boston here in a second because it's one of those nights, one of those crazy old nights. All right, so let me get the introduction properly here. Where is it now? Say bye. There it is. Okay. Joining us from an undisclosed location on Long Island.
The highly controversial lady.
There you go. You're on the safe line.
That's interesting. Interesting introduction. Never had that song, but how you doing?
Well, we're hanging in there, but you know, it's one of those brutal nights in Flushing that we repeated, another 75 to 80 times at least. So you just take it in stride when you see John Mayne go out there and throw batting practice for 5 innings. But
yeah, I mean, 89 miles an hour, no differentiation between his off speed. I have to question whether the guy's healthy. You know, just sitting here and watching him pitch and wondering where the old 95-mile-an-hour John Mayne is. Either he can't get it done anymore, or maybe they've been screwing around with other pitchers this spring. Maybe they're screwing around with him too much. Maybe Mayne is our version of Jabba here. But, yeah, a little sobering day, and yeah, I think you're right. You know, like I said, 85 and 77 is what I figured they'd be. So you got another 76 of these, throughout the course of the season, and even though they're pecking away right now with this ball game.
Yeah, well, I put it on as first and second, Frenchie, I'll be into the four sets. I was hoping for a little rally there over on the air, but at least I got my Rangers home to Friday with a win on the other channel, and I was just checking the Red Sox. I think they were still winning, but
I thought maybe the Yankees had scored a couple of runs, but go back and forth on that one, but
That's what I was getting into. Oh, fly ball. What the heck was that? Oh, yeah, they got a sack fly. I put it back. It was going over Maven's head. He caught it. So down by four with a scant 7 outs to go, and he's changing pitches again. Look at this guy.
Yeah, that's.
And I haven't seen the new bullpens in Citi Field. Supposedly now you can actually. They're side by side instead of one in front of the other like last year. So.
Well, what I'll always remember from last year was they had the Sunday night ESPN game when they were playing the Yankees, and ESPN had cameras down by the bullpen. And when Mariano was coming in for a save situation, obviously the fans can kind of look through like a cage, like they're animals in a cage looking at Mariano, and they were like banging on the cage, going, "Yo, Mariano!" And I'm like. It was like almost the lowest common denominator of baseball fans that they were showing on this thing, and it literally was like Mariano was going to the field of battle with all the Carvinist fans banging on the cage. So
Philly's like that too. I haven't been to the stadium, but I've seen it where this guy's literally on a railing, with his third or fourth beer hanging over the bullpen, especially the road team's bullpen.
And that was purposely done. They put the road team upstairs, and and Wagner used to say how he, warming up, you would hear them scream and yell.
Oh,
and
it looks menacing. It looks like it's medieval. It's better.
Right, well, that's why it's hard to win on the road, right? That's where the whole mental aspect of the game that we debate about and talk about and
The fact that it's a bandbox is another story, but I mean that's neither here nor there with that. But I started the show talking about how a lot of these sports stories have become, sort of pop culture stories, and how they get tracked that way. Tiger being the perfect example. He's spread all over the news now, and under almost every angle you could possibly take has been covered. And then tomorrow he'll actually get in there and actually play some golf, and they'll have a game to analyze rather than everything else. I mean, the new Nike ad is all over the web. I played it before with his deceased father talking about something completely different and him staring forlornly at the camera. It never ends. And then, almost like a blip on the screen, I went looking live on the air for it. The Tiki Barber story, which was huge here in New York today, it didn't even make the blotter over there on TMZ. You had to go scurrying around. I go back and found it on some other site. about his controversy with leaving his pregnant wife for a 23-year-old intern. It just seems like the culture can't get enough dirt on these sports figures. And, like, you know, the Ben Roethlisberger case, I was talking about that before. Obama the other day getting in trouble because he put on a White Sox hat during the first pitch at the Nats game. He got booed. And you wrote a post a couple days ago about the emergence of ESPN New York and what it means for the landscape of terrestrial radio here, you know, as far as what's going to happen with the newspaper talent and just the whole kind of kind of sea changes going on with media, the way it covers sports and the way information is distributed, you know, across these different platforms. So as someone who has a ground job, like a day job, that a lot of these guys don't. I mean, we talk,
right.
We joke about the big fan movie and things like that.
Sure.
And these guys in the Fantasyland movie are right out of that. They're right out of that ilk.
And I haven't watched that yet, but I'm assuming it's big fan too. That's what I'm assuming.
Well, this one kid that they track, this Jet guy,
yes.
You know, he is literally trying to make trades while his wife is giving birth to twins. I mean, it's an upgrade from Tiki Barber leaving his wife while his wife is giving birth to twins. But he's downstairs cutting it. It would make my day even more if I could make this trade. And the guy's like, you've got to be kidding me, on the other end of the phone. And it's at that level where I guess because of the fact that it's so interactive, it's so kind of that, you know, I go back to old enough to remember what a treehouse was. It's that world within a world thing that the web can really telescope in and get very passionate over something completely meaningless. And make it into something, you know, that consumes hours and hours of people's time. And this guy was flying on planes to, you know, interview some of his players and talking to them about, you know, you got to go for more extra base hits. And the guy's looking at him like, what? He's talking to Sheffield, you know.
Like he cares.
Sheffield's like, are you kidding me? And he's giving him, you know, a T-shirt from his fantasy team, you know.
Yeah.
And no, he has no filter. And the funniest part of the movie, and it's a spoiler, but you'll get over it. He's at Wrigley Field watching a Pirate Cub game, probably late August, with another fantasy baseball player, the guy that's in these Tout Wars. And you probably heard some of his names.
Yeah, I've
Wars.
Heard of these guys. Yeah,
Chandler.
Yeah, these are the guys that don't want to talk to me because I question UZR. I mean, I'm actually not cool according to these guys. But you know.
Yeah, but believe me, they have a lot of. The couches, they open up an Ethan Allen furniture store watching these people. So the
right.
guy's talking to the camera, the guy he went to the game with, and the kind of the focus of the movie, he's sitting in the bleachers. Now, he's sitting in the bleachers, you know, before a Cub game. It's just like Yankee Stadium. It's like it's a little bit, you know, kind of a raucous thing. He's not a Cub fan. He's not paying attention. He gets hit in the right in the forehead with the fungo that goes in the stands, and it about takes him out. So the one guy's talking to the camera, boom, and it's like, you know, and they show him, like, you know, getting treated. He's got, like, basically got, like, you know, stitches on his head.
Right, because he's at an actual game. He's actually
right.
not paying attention. And,
yeah.
You know, you have to actually, when you're on the field, and I don't go and cover, you know, this big league games a lot. I get to go down to the minor leagues, but I've been down there, and there's a couple times these guys are playing catch, and you're, like, behind them, and you forget, hey, you know, they're good, but they're human. And you know, the interesting thing is you just kind of encompass so many different things. And I was in Trenton yesterday talking to some guys that write for me that, you know, kind of on the MLB writing side, and there were guys from major newspapers but lower down on the rung over there, and we're talking about the industry, ESPN New York, and you just encompass so many things that literally we could have a 5-hour show just on this thing. Because, you know, I've said this to you when we've talked on and off the air. When I say it's the Wild West, it is the Wild West with this whole thing. Nobody knows where it's going. And I'll give you a quote. A guy from one of the major newspapers, and you know what they are, the Newsday, Daily News,
yep.
New York Post, and I'm not going to tell you which one. I don't want to get him in trouble. But he basically said, we're a house of cards. It's not a matter of when. It's not a matter of if. It's a matter of when this thing all falls apart. And the stories of the just disconnect between newspaper and their own business. And it's not just money. I mean, they don't have the money. We know that. It's also at a point where I don't think they know how to promote their talent. I will say this. Me, with my little website, bringing in my little revenue that was started basically on a whim as a radio show 3 years ago, I've done a better job marketing and getting myself out there with no budget, less budget than a newspaper has, than what these guys are doing. And it's almost like they're potentially shooting themselves in the foot because the landscape's changing right in front of them. Either they don't know how to adjust to it or they don't want to. And you have ESPN New York coming in, and I know that they're criticizing a lot of the content right now, especially the hardcore fans, the guys that you see on Twitter that come to my site. I mean, the guys who you just described that are living this thing 24/7, you know, it's too vanilla for them. It's too top line for them. When they see a story about how A-Rod and Jeter are getting along, they view that as not nutty, you know, meaty enough for them. But I'm going to tell you, this is every major beat writer that you enjoy is being targeted by ESPN New York. I know that for a fact. That's Jet guys, Giant guys. They're not done. They're just beginning, and they're going to try to make that site not so much compete with NYBD because we can't compete with them, and they really can't provide the view that we have because they're not fans. They're professionals. But they are going to render going to the Daily News website, the New York Post website, and Newsday utterly useless.
So
utterly useless. You will never need to go to those three sites. The only reason you might go to any of those three sites, if there is a specific writer that you enjoy that much, like a Ken Davidoff, or any of these new and up-and-coming guys that have been plugging in for guys like Ruben, develop a following, which the jury's going to be out, and I think it's going to be hard, you're not going to. I mean, at this point, Adam Rubin, and there's everybody else covering the Mets right now. And I'm not just saying that because, you know what, Adam's not a bad guy. I don't know him, and I'm not saying that to get in his good graces, but he just works harder and smarter than the rest of them. The rest of them are looking for their, basically to go to the guillotine. Adam knows where things were going, and while other guys are taking lunch breaks, he's going on the backfield talking to minor league development guys.
Well, that's why last summer when the whole thing hit the fan, you know, with Bernazard, you know, I know from back channels through you that he was, you know, Adam was on that story for months.
Oh, yeah. He was talking about it. Right, right.
And so for you know, the Mets to basically look at him as someone who was, you know, basically writing his resume to get involved with the organization. I mean, I remember watching that almost like surreal. Again, this is where sports becomes like life. It has this soap opera quality to it. We are watching a press conference, and the GM of a major sports franchise, I mean, I don't want to make the Mets more than they are, but they're not podunk.
No,
he goes and singles out one reporter and starts berating him with his peers.
Right.
And Adam's
it's
like,
crazy.
Yeah. You've got to be kidding me, he's thinking to himself. And Manaea keeps his job, and then the whole infrastructure of the Mets becomes sort of like, talk about the hide coming off the baseball. By the way, we have bases loaded here and two out, and they brought him in the bullpen.
And everyone's favorite second baseman is up, so I'm sure I'm sure we'll get to fan negativity, but I'm sure they're hearing themselves out.
Well, we'll try and just, you know, Grand Slam ties the game, is all I know. So, just knock on something. But it was almost like one of those, like, surreal moments in, like, a documentary where you go, somebody walk over and get Manaea out of there, and it kept going on. Then he went on this, like, four or five layer of apologies that made it worse. And like he was like right after that press conference, they went and did something in the upstairs for the beat writers.
Worst
came
mistake
on the air.
He made. Yeah, Wolpon came out. It was compounding one mistake after another. And what I would say to you is this: you know, you talk about the gossip aspect of baseball and sports, not just baseball. And I agree with you because you do get into that. This is a male soap opera. You don't have Days of Our Lives. You don't have 90210. Males don't want to sit down like women. And this is not a knock on any race. I'm not trying to, you know, be chauvinistic here. But, they, men and women look at different things. And baseball provides men something that they can't get from going to, some kind of drama show on Channel 11. But I also think the mainstream media is using some of this stuff, like what you saw with Tiki Barber and more so with Tiger, to sell newspapers because they can't compete with, heck, opinion-based stuff. And I'm not being conceited. There is not, with the exception of the really big-name guys who are using their access to the highest level, I feel my knowledge on the Mets and the Yankees is right up there with these guys. I didn't go to journalism school. I may not be as good a writer as them. And I have a full-time job that I'm lucky I'm able to still follow this stuff. But I've been watching baseball long enough on a different level that I could compete with them. So what they can only do is they can sensationalize and get to the next level with back-channel sources and try to compete with TMZ, who beat them to it, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But they're doing it in a way where there's kind of an eye roll. Like, I'm eye-rolling when I look at a newspaper and I see Tiger Woods, and now they're really trying to make this out to be more than it is. Quite honestly, in the world of baseball or sports or in the blogosphere or independent media, this would have been a big story for a day. We may or may not have covered it in the sense where the newspapers would have. Maybe some snark, maybe some commentary about how it's going to impact him on the field. It would have went away. But they're continuing to drag the story out in the mainstream because they have nothing else. There's no other reason for me when I'm walking into a convenience store and I'm, you know, six or seven deep in a busy morning to look over at the rack and say, let me see what's going on, and just to get an attention grabber. And that's the sad part, is that they've actually resorted to the Inquirer-style journalism. And I shouldn't even say that because the Inquirer does good work in some cases.
Yeah, like I said, everything is reversed. The mainstream media has become like the guy at the Masters, you know, chastising Tiger for his behavior as they're about to bank on this guy for 4 days. And
right.
Then in the small print it says at the bottom, you know, our members met and women still can't golf here and blacks, if they're not Tiger Woods, good luck. You know, so
sure.
The hypocrisy is like, you know, it's 9 miles high, and I think, like I said, they think the audience is stupid, gullible, and they're just going to show up anyway, just like baseball does, you know, with all the way that they handle, you know, performance
right.
enhancing drugs, and even in our little world here in New York, you know, dealing
and
with
fans don't care about that either, and that's I've said that to
don't
people.
Care at all.
You know, the writers get all sanctimonious about the Hall of Fame. I've
Purity.
Done numerous stuff on PEDS. I felt it was an obligation for the kind of work I'm trying to do to address it, and sometimes I have a more passionate opinion when it takes a turn than others. They don't care, and quite honestly, I don't want to sound mean. If a guy wants to shove something in their body, it's not a big concern of mine. It really isn't.
To me, it's on the same level of Hollywood having plastic surgery, which is now completely destigmatized. It's not stigmatized at all.
Sure.
Why wouldn't an athlete take a performance-enhancing drug if his career is a five-year window and he's competing against other people doing the same thing and there's no test for it?
No, that's the thing. That they I always kind of have this debate, and you could take this so many different ways, but the point is the media is using it to generate their version of journalism. Not that they can't – they're not journalists. They are journalists that write for these papers. They can't compete because – and I was talking to a longtime writer yesterday. A guy who's out of the business, retired, was doing this stuff back in the 70s. He said, you know, I see people they hire. They're great writers. They went to school. They did everything right. They don't know the game. They're better off hiring a guy like me who may not be as good a writer, but let's be honest, I have a business degree. The only reason I'm not a great writer per se like these guys are because – I have a different style of writing that I've been doing for 10 years, memo style, quick blurbs over email, that I've had to adjust. I could go to a class and maybe in a semester be up to snuff, in my opinion, not with the great, great writers, but with pretty average out-of-school college writers. And sometimes I think we take like writing to a level where it's not about information. It's like some people feel it's about art, the elitist, I would say. And that to me is – that's not what this is all about. It's about content. It's about entertaining, so to speak. You know, look, a guy got thrown out of the plate. That was.
As you're talking this, the agita just went right through the
top
of my head.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, that's
on third
with David Wright. With David Wright at the plate, nonetheless.
The plate,
I mean,
the chance,
you know,
to gap
it's a really,
there,
you know,
the game.
Yeah, it's just so frustrating with that.
That is an only the Mets moment. But
you're
making your point here is that, see, you and I are interested in the game because there's so much, to me, still interesting about a game. Like the game Monday night, the basketball game Monday night, the NCAA game, the Butler, the way that whole dynamic between Butler and Duke, and the way the refs are letting them just beat the crap out of each other, was like watching a game at you know, the 4th Street courts down the city. They were mauling each other, And the game ends on a coach's decision, you know, with his half court shot that just basically just missed. And it would have been the ultimate Hoosiers moment. But the thing is that, like you said, there's nobody covering those games that is that entrenched in the sport. They're more entrenched in the story and the behind-the-scenes stuff, that VH1 behind-the-scenes stuff, because that's where they're going to get their name made for themselves, as you call them, journalists. And ultimately, that's what the fans really care about, because if there's so much of a attention based on fantasy, you know, like the opening things of that movie, the amount of money that's wasted, productivity-wise, you know, all these guys basically, they're day trading and
I'll even go one step further. I mean, I've studied my traffic. My traffic is between 9 and 5, really big time. Now, during certain news times and especially in the off-season, you'll have night traffic. Now you're not going to really have that because the game's on right now. People shouldn't be sitting on my site reading my stuff unless, I guess, a game gets out of control or news breaks during the game or what have you. But people are not being productive at work because, let's be honest, corporate America has kind of dummied down most of the jobs that are out there. People are spending more time at their desk, working more, doing less, and they're going to sneak away and try to steal time any way possible. And how are they going to do that? They got to latch on to something. What's the easiest thing to latch on to? Mets blog, your fantasy team, Twitter, things like that, because you humans are not conditioned, to borrow a quote from Office Space, to be sitting cubicles in their entire life and filling out reports. That's not what we're conditioned to do. We're doing that to make money, but we need other things, and this is obviously – like you said, the fantasy sports is part of that. But I kind of feel bad for some of these guys that are writing for these papers because they're talented. They're hamstrung in some ways because they can't do what I do. I could go on that website and I can write whatever I want, and the only person I'm accountable to is myself. And some would say I'm not even accountable because if I decided to write something and shut that site down tomorrow, nobody could stop me or come get me.
Right, there's no obligation.
There's no obligation, exactly, other than public shame, which, by the way, people who have disagreed with me have tried to use that to get rid of me. I mean, and that's always been funny because I've always said this. I don't take this seriously. I mean, and I would never write something that I wouldn't feel comfortable, and I said this yesterday to somebody. I said, I would never write something that anybody that if I sat down and looked at them in the eye, whether it was good or bad or different, whether I – was right or maybe I was off the base, where I wouldn't look at them and say, you know what, it was my opinion, you could agree with it or not, but I don't have any qualms in looking you in the eye and standing by what I wrote. I've never attacked anyone's family. I've never gone after people personally or hit below the belt. I guess some people could debate that. But, you know, even with guys like Carton and Francesa, guys that I've gone after pretty hard, I've never felt like, you know, if they're I haven't done things that Carton has done to people and dragged their families or their personal transgressions into it. It's all professional. It's all about the performance. And I don't necessarily know if the papers or the mainstream publications, as you look at this Tiger Woods thing, they've dug pretty good on this stuff. They followed the wife around, waiting for him to slip on the banana peel. And it's funny because that's the kind of stuff that they would be the first to point the finger at for an independent, a blog, a Deadspin, but they're doing it. And, the big reason for it is because they can't compete. And they still have it. They still have a medium to get a message out. And if I was running Daily News or New York Post and I saw ESPN New York coming out, I would pretty much try to say, okay, how in my sports section can I go out there and revamp what I'm doing and have my paper generate solid, hard opinion? And do I have the staff to do that? And if the answer is no, then you got to go get it. You got to go find it. You have enough people you could hire out of college to do the X's and O's. Heck, you know they could purchase AP stories to put in their paper that tell you basically the Mets lost today 6-3 and Tatis got thrown out at the plate. Mm-hmm. They have some writers sitting in some desk somewhere that you could put that in there. And the perfect example is the Wall Street Journal, which just hired Jim Bombeck from Newsday. They got into the sports business, but they're not doing any of that stuff because they know the guy who's reading the Wall Street Journal maybe wants to know about sports, but he wants to know something different. They're, like, for example, they were at the Garden a week ago when the Knicks were playing the Nuggets. They did a story on George Karl battling cancer. That's something that I probably would have looked at if I had a Wall Street Journal on the train.
Mm-hmm.
But if they wrote a story that the Knicks lost to the Nuggets, I don't need to read what that guy's, you know, what happened in that game. I know. I watched it. And
no, that part of the, of newspapers and even websites has become AP, UPI, you know, just the facts, ma'am, kind of stuff, which the people that are interested in discussing a game are not going to – they know that already. They know that before they even look.
You need an opinion. You have to have an opinion. Even these blogs, I tell some of these guys, I love these guys. They're all great. I read their blogs, and half of them I'm like, you're telling me that Nelson Figueroa got released. I know. You have to tell me why you think that's a bad move. And don't try to be Matt Cerrone. We have Matt Cerrone already. He's got that market covered. He's not going anywhere. You're not beating him. Okay, so what's next? I can't beat him. I can't, and not that I want to, but I can't beat those guys. I can't beat John Heyman for rumor mills. Even that part, which I thought was something we were adding different, I've backed off on because I can't win because the news moves too fast for me.
You need to quit your day job and monetize that part of your business to replace the income, because the man hours it would take to scoop these people is you know, you'd need to be a nanosecond ahead of them, especially when it comes to trade rumors, or you don't get the credit, which is all.
You're not going to. It's a losing. Now, you can still do it, but you have to be tactical about it. So what I can offer is an opinion, and that's what I hope all the guys on the site do, is their own brand of opinion, their own style. And that's the way, like, you know, what I wrote today about David Wright, and all I did was read a column about the description of the scene in his locker after the game, and that whole thing came to my head and said, you know what, this is this guy's life for the next 162 games. This is this guy's life. It's got not easy. I mean, not that you're going to cry for him. He's making $10 million this year. But this is going to add a layer of complexity to his season when he needs to rebound, when there's questions about his future and what he can produce. And that's where an opinion came out. Now, whether you agree or disagree with it, whether you say the guy has access and knows what he's talking about or not, it's still something for someone to chew on when they're on the train going to work. And if they would like to, leave a comment. And that's the differentiation. And each of these papers have to ask themselves, do I have the right people that can do that, that have their own, you know, I'm going to sound corny here, I don't want to sound like a Gary Vee, but their own individual brand here. You know, what's Kevin Kernan? What's he known for? You know, that's what I'm talking about. You know, that's the kind of stuff that I think they missed the boat on, because they're looking to hire what the resume says. They went to this school, they got this grade, their writing is this excellent. Okay, he could go cover the Mets for me. No, he can't. Have you ever watched the Mets game? No, but I know baseball. Do you really? Well, I know how to get sources. Great. You know how to go and, you know, ask, you know, four or five questions. You have to hear these questions I hear at these things. I'm like, half this stuff I could sit from home and do. I could probably write about tonight's game sit from home. Not that that's the right way to go about it, but it just tells you how you have to be better and have an opinion and work harder. And for every Adam Rubin, I think there's 10 guys that are, you know, not in the same league as me, much less the people they're competing with.
He stands out like a Lupica did 20, 25 years ago, because he has a very visible opinion that's backed up by fact. It's nice to have just an opinion, but it's like sometimes the Chatty Cathys that call the fan.
Well, he's knowledgeable.
Sounds like they thought these things through.
Yeah. No. I mean, he knows the – I mean, if Francesa, who should be working as hard as Adam Rubin for the money he's getting paid, knew about his Yankees, never mind Mets, the Yankees system as well as Rubin knows the Mets, I don't know if that I would think that show would be that much better.
Yeah,
he had
Kim Jones on today, and basically Kim Jones was actually applying for a segment job on the air because – She gave him information in 5 minutes about Mariano, about the stuff to do with last night with Burnett and Posada, and stuff that Mike was like, really, you know, you don't want to be saying really on drive time if it counted.
I mean, the Mariano stuff just came out today in the afternoon, and she kind of had the interview. She talked to him, but he should at least be versed up to that point, or while he's doing the show, be kind of scouring. He should have a Twitter list and have Kim Jones on the Twitter list because that's where I got it from.
Yeah,
and I know people are laughing. The tools are all there. If
I know
you don't want to change,
it.
If you don't want to change, that's fine. I was talking to someone yesterday night, and we brought up the fan, and this person actually talked to Chernoff to you know at times and said what he thought about the morning show, and he actually went to Carton and said why he didn't like the morning show, and Carton basically was like, well, you don't know what I'm trying to do. Yeah, Carton, we know what you're trying to do. Watch Private Parts. And if you have to, actually, I recommend, because it was on last week, watch Private Parts, because it'll tell you, A, what's wrong with radio, and B, how brilliant Howard Stern was, whether you like him or dislike him, and C, it's the what Carton's trying to do. It's been done already. We did Private Parts. It's been done already. And my vision of what the fan should be is far different. And I even said, I said, take a five-hour show, knock an hour's worth of Joey Boombot's calls, with all due respect, and put – I could give you four guys that you could put on for 15-minute segments that are pretty much no names like me, but would give you more value than sitting there doing calls.
But
they'll
if you're Chernoff, is it more to your advantage to get a Steve Phillips back on the air because he's going to bring an undercurrent of a TMZ kind of shadow – that he does have some background. He's, you know, he's got some accoutrement.
He's
whatever.
He's a
recognizable name.
He's a designer name. I always call the designer name. Like, if you have if you're a former player, you have a designer name. But how good are you? What could you bring to the table?
Yeah.
I'll tell you the one guy, and he's kind of just emerging. He's a designer name, but I think he has a ton that he's going to offer. If he brings it all together, is Morgan Ensberg. I don't know if you've read his site. I mean, the guy gets it. Morgan Ensberg is going to be the guy. And he doesn't even know this, and we haven't had a chance to really talk. Morgan Ensberg is going to be the one guy, the one ball player that's smart enough to connect my world and his world and really connect it. And if people read him, they'll see. They'll see why their thinking isn't 100%. And he'll probably understand why baseball's thinking isn't 100%, even though they think they know everything. And that's all I've been trying to do with this thing. And then that's the amazing part. And we've actually seen, and I don't know if you've and Bob Sykes brought this up. He talked about, like, the think tank that people get when they're in a room together. Like, beat writers spend 162 days around this team plus spring training, and you kind of get, like, group thought instead of individual thought. And I guess you're like the expert on this stuff. It's inevitable when you're following one team and you have five compadres, even though they were different papers, you guys start to kind of talk alike, think alike, say the same things. Just read these guys on Twitter. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we're seeing that on the Internet now, because when it goes to the negativity of the fan base, you'll have like an amazing avenue that becomes like this place where people go to comment and write. And all of a
sudden,
it used
to be Mets blog. Mets blog stopped doing that because the comments got so personal to Matt that he shut it down, and he made people basically become part of a pool of commentators that he would allow to post. And this gets into the sort of the dark side of the fandom, is that one of the reasons why I think a platform like satellite radio has not really captured the local markets is because of the fact that when you're broadcasting nationally, you don't get that passion, you know, to surface, you know, focally like it does around here. As the Mets get back-to-back runners after that freaking play at the end of the seventh inning.
Would have been nice if they would have kept
it. Would have been nice. We could have been tied here. So now we got the tying run of the plate. Nobody out. So anyway, see, we're watching the game. So
right.
Sad. So, but I watch a platform like Sirius emerge, and originally, you know, Howard left terrestrial radio because of the lack of freedom on the air, and Carton took that place, you know, where – you know, guys like, what do you call it? Oh, I see their faces, not their names. They used to be on both satellite and Sirius.
Opie and Anthony talking about?
O&A. I'm seeing letters, O&A. Like, O&A tried to straddle that line. And
they imploded.
They imploded because you can't be in both universes. And when you go satellite, you disappear to the local market, and you become a national underground voice, so to speak. And that's why when you see what's happened with Mad Dog Radio over there, where he's been now replaced by the new Mad Dog, you know, the guy that came in from the West Coast, is the overnight guy that gets written up in Daily News all the time, his name escaped me too. And he is going on the air at 7 o'clock at night. Look at this double play ball. Oh, threw it away. That's a run.
Yeah, you're ahead of me. I'm on DirecTV. Yeah, you're ahead of me on TV. But
Tomorrow's a sloppy. But I watch this guy come on. He comes on at 7 o'clock at night right after Mad Dog's on. He spends the first 40 minutes of his show making fun of the old man Russo and how out of touch he is, you know, with
right.
his big baseball encyclopedias and things like that. Oh, let me get the baseball encyclopedia. Get the hand truck. And he's like, you know, the platforms and the interactivity and the, as you said, the group think, because it becomes like a beehive. The internet, in a very very real sense, becomes sort of like the water cooler where everybody's gathering to get information, and they do start to, you know, act the same like in this tout wars. It's amazing how they're interviewing these guys all over the country, and it's the same four line quip about the new guy. You know, well, you know, he's a little obsessed. He's a little, and it's like they have that elitism or that inner circle thing that goes on where you got to be part of the club,
and you
got to
think the same. See,
you've
got to
go along
with
the think
exactly.
factory. Yeah.
Exactly.
You've got
to think the same. And that's why I get into trouble, because my whole thing is I try to play both sides of the stick, and that pisses people off. I'm not really a mainstream guy. I don't want to be considered a blogger. You know, and I got the best compliment yesterday from somebody in the industry. They're like, you do this for a living, right? I'm like, no, I don't. Like, the station doesn't pay you? I'm like, I make very little money out of this thing. I'm very clear about that. And that's why I tell people when they say you're looking for a job, I'm not looking for a job here. I'd love to work for any one of the outlets around here. I'm not going to do it for free. I'm not going to slap their name to tell everybody, wow, you know, I've got ESPN on my site, or I have WFAN affiliated with, when there's no cash coming in. Because to me, that's just against, you know, what I'm about, and I feel it almost would take away from an independent thought. But that's the interesting part. These guys all got away because they wanted to create a medium where they didn't get the same think tank that maybe that you'd get from the beats that spend all this time around the team. But they're creating it. And you saw it. The best example was with Jeff Francoeur. How they all don't like him because there's one thing he doesn't do. He doesn't walk. And then everything else went out. And if you were against that, you were wrong. And you were actually put as either ignorant, stupid, I mean, all sorts of things. And it really, it just amazed me how they're guilty now of the same things that they hate. And I guess it's almost like this cycle where now you have this new medium and you're doing the same things. Think of it this way. People left England all those hundreds of years ago to come here for freedom, and now we're doing the same things that the British did that made them leave in the first place. The cycle, it's almost the cycle repeats itself.
Wow.
And,
this is highbrow stuff for so much.
I'm telling you, think about it. The stuff that we ran, the people ran away from England to come here for, we're just recycling, and history's repeating itself, and we're doing the same thing with the internet. You're kind of getting away from the think tank. You're creating your own think tank, and you're going back to high school, and you're separating. It's us, them, it's our clique, this clique. You know, some people go to Mets blog, some people go to Amazing Avenue, some people go to River Avenue Blues. They stop by my site, and that's really been the biggest criticism anyone can make about my site is people don't hang out on it. They come, they take their shot, they leave. They come, they take their shot, they leave.
Uh-huh.
And it puts the pressure on me that now every day I have to come up with an idea. Not that I'm contriving it, but I have to be creative every day, and that's virtually impossible to do 24/7, 365.
Well, with a life. I mean, that's the difference.
Well, I have other things going on. I'm distracted. Yeah, I have
a
life. Cerrone
aspired. Cerrone aspired to be, you know, part of the media, and that was his angle from the beginning. When you go on Mets Blog in 2005, there might be 300-400 comments from a post he made because he was as if you were talking to him, sitting watching the game. He was very much like you in the beginning, in the sense that he had an opinion, he put it out there, and he waited for reaction, and it went back and forth. And the internet in 2005 and 2010 are two completely different universes, really.
Right, it's totally.
And different. The comment section was what Twitter was. You know, it was just a slower version of it. And now that he's crossed over and he's a company man for SNY, and he goes down for spring training, and he's got access in the clubhouse. Last year, that almost blew up on him because the beat writers were sick of him. You know, getting access, and who's this stupid blogger? I'm over here working for my, you know, my $50,000.
But even to defend Matt, you know, that was not right either, because he really has opened it up and shown them what the fans want. And Jerry's
yes.
now going bananas.
Yeah,
and, instead of saying, look at what Matt, look at what, how can I do what Matt does with my access, and realize that Matt is a big piece of a very big pool of opportunity. They fought it, or they got angry at it, because it made their jobs harder. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, fans want, they know they're going to get the game story. And they're probably not going to read it unless they really want to watch the game.
Yeah.
They're probably going to go to their iPhone and look at the play-by-play or the brief recap on ESPN. They want opinion. They want to devour all sorts of opinion. And if you have access and use that access in a way to responsibly put out an opinion, even better, to give you a different perspective. And that's where I will defend Matt with that whole thing, because he just was showing them the way, and he happened to have a great domain name, a great idea. He was the first one at it, and he developed the following. And I've spoken to him, and here's the interesting part, because we talked about it, about, how, even with me, in some ways, I'm not niche enough. Even though I felt, how much more niche can I get, I'm New York baseball. So when somebody
yep.
thinks of Mets, they're going to probably think of Matt Cerrone before me. When someone thinks of Yankees, they're going to think of someone else before me, and that's really what may be holding me back. But I still believe in the idea that one person can, not that I'm trying to be ESPN, but be an opinion on New York baseball. And,
well,
and I think
and
there's something there.
The pros are obviously going to be 80% of your content, but you have a relationship all the way down to the minor leagues, the lower levels, where you have stringers in there. You actually can follow a player from Brooklyn all around to Binghamton and back
to
the Mets.
Austin Romine is a guy that
yeah.
interviewed yesterday that he'll probably be in the big leagues. You might see him for a cup of coffee next year. Frank Court took a walk. Look, he can actually walk.
Howard up.
Pull Howard up. I'm going to see him tomorrow, so I'm going to make sure to remind him about that. But
He took a 3-2 pitch.
And I think that's where this is going, though, because the connection with the team for these fans now starts at Brooklyn and moves up. Look
right.
at what Mejia. We would never, 10 years ago, this Mejia decision would not have been a big deal in the media. With the fans, excuse me, that would have been a big deal with the fans. The
media would have made a bigger deal of it than the fans did. Yeah,
right,
the fans,
who is this guy? Who cares about the pitch count development, Binghamton?
Right.
Binghamton was a faraway place that you probably had to look at a map to even know where they were. And now MILB every night and the pitch – everybody's a pitching coach now. The Yes Network now puts pitch counts up. Everybody's an expert. That's fine. That's what the game is all about. That's what the league wants. They want fans to be like this. But, I think there's something there. But even for me, I thought, can I niche further? It's interesting, and somebody told me, they said, I don't think of maybe Mets or Yankees first thing when I think of those opinions. I don't think of you. But when something happened with, like, for example, Steve Phillips was hired by WFAN, I wanted to know what you said. Now, that tells me there's a niche there that maybe, that whole media commentary I've kind of carved out.
We've gone through with John Murray, the sports psychologist, too. Well, last year with Pelfrey's the stuff, and even some of the stuff, the aftermath of Reyes being, differentially diagnosed by every armchair doctor in the tri-state area while he was, was it thyroiditis, is it this, is it
yeah.
that, and we went back and forth a little bit on email and then a little bit on the site about it, that you have to sort of forgive them. They don't know what they do. But when you start getting into a player's well-being, in difference than him being on and off a DL list, if this guy ends up tacking out from a heart attack, the lawyers will line up from here to Florida. And they don't understand that. I mean, and Eddie Curry, with the Knicks, same stuff. Four or five of these guys collapsed dead on the floor in NCAA Division I this year.
It was only 20 years earlier that Hank Gathers.
Hank Gathers, yeah, perfect example.
And there's a guy that they were crying about. I mean, why did people do more? I mean, and obviously, rightfully so.
There's an ignorance and an arrogance that kind of combine together to create a level of stupidity that you just, as someone who knows something, and you just want a seat at the table because you're not Steve Phillips, and maybe you are Howard, maybe you are Howard McDowell, who's very learned, very well written, understands the team, knows players from the minor leagues, but won't get the same credibility as Steve Phillips would on a Mike Francesa show because who's Howard Bigdell to him? But the thing is, if you gave him 20 minutes a week, he would learn more about the Mets than he possibly could stand. But Mike,
and maybe 10 years from now,
and
maybe 10 years from now it changes. Maybe 10 years from now, because there's a benchmark of credibility, and this is now not such a Wild West, maybe it's more stabilized. Maybe that's not the case. And I'll tell you what. I mean, this is where I would even if I was, and you know, if I was talking to Mike as just a, hey, let me just give you advice if you really want to be good the next whatever how many years you got left here. But what I've done the last 3 years with the radio show and the site and the podcast and talking to people, whether I agree or disagree with them, I have learned more about the game the last 3 years than the first. I started watching baseball 86, let's say, the first 20 years of watching the sport. I learned more in 3 years than I did in 20 years. 20 years of mainly mainstream digestion of media, I learned more the last 3 years than the first. Now, maybe that's because information is available, and that's part of the problem now, where you almost become bored with mainstream media because what can they give you that you can't get on your own?
And
what kind of analysis are they going to do that you can't do on your own?
It's all sitting on the web anyway.
Right, right.
You know, so it's like
one.
Even if you miss it, there's a real-time aspect to it. Another
right.
3-2 pitch this guy swings at. Oh, he airmailed it. He airmailed the throw. Oh, these Mets. The Marlins are brutal. I mean,
their bullpen
is
shaky. Yeah,
they're brutal, and their defense is brutal. They look like us.
Yeah, they're
look at this guy. He's the 5-1 to left field. It was probably about. Look at this throw.
Right.
Oh my God! It was through in the stands. He could have walked home. Oh my God! So now you got two out bases loaded.
Yeah, so you basically got two outs. So, you know, that's part of the problem. It's really hard to differentiate yourself. It's really hard to be good. But everybody wants an opinion. So if you have that foundation, that basis, your site's going to have some kind of traffic as long as you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but again, you said to the point, if you want to learn about the game, like the actual game, and not play Stat Geek and not play Gossip Hound, the only audiences you had going back was ESPN and FAN locally here, where they would actually give you, you know, sort of the editorial of the game, like strategy and things like that. Like especially NFL season, Mike and the Mad Dog in their heyday, you waited for 1 o'clock on Monday to talk about the previous day's NFL games. Where now, like you said, it's a 24/7 cycle. There's a constant barrage of opinion that comes in, and you have to, as the half the equation, you have to say fish or fowl. Does this person give me an opinion or a reaction? Oh, you know, and a lot of times you get reaction that disguises itself as opinion, and you get sucked into an argument where there really wasn't anything down that alley except another reaction. So that's why you see, you know, the friction developing, and this is one of the things I wanted to get to before we got off the air, where that rooting has now become rooting for a team, like we're sitting here watching the Mets with one eye, like we want to scream, but we can't, is that it's much more about hating on the other team or on the umps or specific players on your team, where you're actually venting. It's not so much rooting. Like, if you're at a ball game now, there are more Tourette's reactions going on in the crowd to whatever's going on because it's almost like it's a heightened importance of you know.
Well, Mets fans are different, though. You know, I think if you go to my site.
Mets fans are changing, yeah.
Mets fans are changing. I wrote about that. But even if you go to my site, and I know I'm a very modest, very small. I mean, I don't even know if you wanted to talk about a stadium population. What am I, 10th, 1.1 of the stadium population? So take it with a grain of salt. But you see how you get a rise out of Mets fans, you don't know the Yankee fans. There was one topic over the last 3 years that's gotten a rise out of Yankee fans, and that's Jabba Chamberlain. That's it. You know, everything else is like, yeah, right, I get what you're saying. We'll see, you know, and the whole nine yards. But it goes back to information. If this team was trotted out in 1997 that we see today, we would have known there was flaws. But the fact that you don't have UZR back then and OPS Plus and all these other metrics, you would probably root for this team more on, well, here's what they can do. I hope that this will happen. But now data is telling you it's not going to happen, even though you could argue that too. It's almost like they can't accept The data is forcing them to not want to hope. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And that was always what Met fans were about. We're about hope. And Yankees fans were about arrogance. And now data kind of spits in the face of both of those, because it's harder for a Yankee fan to be arrogant when they could they have their own flaws exposed, and it's harder for a Met fan to hope when theirs are. And that's the interesting part about all that.
That, and you'll find that in that Fantasyland movie, that there's such a left brain overload of information that, you know, when they try to make trades, it's based on this Bible of information, projected saves.
But isn't corporate America going that way when you think about
people's
everyday lives?
If you can reduce everything
lives,
to right, if you can reduce everything to some type of bottom line statistic, it makes it ice cold, and it's an objective quote unquote thing. But the thing is, the way you formulate the statistics, one of the reasons why I love the way you broke down the UCR thing, is that when you look at a statistic in a vacuum, it looks important. When you look at where that statistic came from and is it relevant to what I'm really looking at, now you start getting into, like, I better know what I'm doing, because otherwise the stats can lie, and the stats lie very well.
Exactly, because UZR is people sitting in a room, and I've been told, you know, you hear, well, these are former college baseball players that they hire, and fine, I'm all for that. You know, I like somebody who played the game to tell me. But it's that person's opinion whether they should have caught or not. And I'm not saying, you know, maybe 85% of it's accurate. Also, what does -5 UZR mean to me? Well, he's going to have to give up 5 more runs this year. Well, out of 162 games, 5 runs, I mean, that's not great, but that's not a lot. I mean, I've seen people piss away one guy be responsible for 5 runs in a game, which is leaving runners on base, right?
Right.
So it's very difficult for me to intellectualize this stuff. I have more respect for it today than I did at this time last year, but I guess my biggest problem with that community is they're very sensitive. They don't like to be challenged, and they can't argue conceptually. They only look at things. They can't look at things conceptually.
Well,
and the best example, exactly.
They don't have a big picture view of what all that stuff means. They have 1,000 details, but no big picture. Like, there's like 1,000,000 jigsaw puzzle pieces, but no picture on the box. So they pick up an individual puzzle piece. They hold it up to light. They go, "Oh, this is a pretty puzzle piece. This is all I'm going to talk about." But like right now, you got a 1-run game here. And you got who's up there, Pagan?
Alex Cora, who's going to be the
okay.
If he makes it out, they're going to have a whole thing. But I'll even give you one better here is, you know, again, I go back to my company, a consumer goods company here. They'll make decisions based on numbers, but they never factor into the equation, can the trade handle all these things at one time? Can the person who manages a convenience store digest and comprehend all were thrown at them at one time? And the answer is, well, that doesn't matter. He's going to have to, because the business is changing. But that's – and I know you can't make decisions based on that, but that's where – and the comparison I'm trying to make is what you talk about all the time is the human element that's so intangible that could be argued and debated, and your opinion is one thing and mine is another. Balk?
Look at this. The Mets just tied the game on a base loaded walk and a balk. That's what the Mets do.
Yeah, that's what they do. But you couldn't get that from a stat, statistics. And here's the next thing you're going to hear, okay? Win probability. I've talked about that on the site. The win probability for the Mets tonight, just 20 minutes ago when we came on the air, or 30 minutes ago, was very low. And now look, it's tied, right?
Yeah. As I said, we're watching this game, and the Mets, basically,
right,
if they had any luck at all last inning, they'd be winning the game right now.
And the
but
game would be K-Rod coming in and getting
rid
of
it. Yeah, well, hey, we get another run here, he does come in.
But our society, my point is, our society's, I see it in corporate America, I see it with the kids coming up, and maybe I'm just looking at this from a very simplistic view, but it's a concerning thing, because you see it on the blogosphere, because these are guys who are not doing this for a living. They're working for somebody. And some of them may be actually making decisions that one day impact your life. And you see the way they think, and you say to yourself, they're smart guys. They could do a lot. They could do a term paper like nobody's business. But
right,
do I want them talking to people and managing my business?
Well, again, this comes out in the Fantasyland movie, The Tower Wars. There's such a lack of interpersonal skills of being able to actually talk to a human being, especially the kahuna of the group, this Chandler dude, who is just aghast at this lead character, Jed, who's an eco like me. He's an emotional wreck. you know, he drives 8 hours to the guy's house to try to make a trade because he wouldn't return 100 emails. So he drives all night to try to make it. The guy's like, you're in my house. You didn't call me. It's like there's a sort of a safety with the web, especially with a lot of the interactive stuff, especially with the stat geeks, that they can hide behind a lot of numbers. But when their emotions come up, they're like Spock. They don't have to do it themselves.
And they won't and come. Like, and I've even offered to have them kind of come on the air. And and they don't. They're afraid.
They can't talk like us for 40 minutes.
And then they're surprised. Anything. Yeah, and they're surprised when some of them have heard. I've had some of them email me, well, listen to your show. You're not a bad guy. And I'm like, I'm really not. You know, I went to this Bloomberg event with a room of these guys. And, you know, some of them are and to me, I'm a little uncomfortable because, you know, I'm a 33-year-old guy. There's a few early 20s college kids and I'm kind of out of place, let's face it. Sometimes I feel out of place in this whole thing. And there's a few that, you know, let me be kind here, and I'm sure, I mean, who knows if they listen or not, but they could work some social skills here. They could work in some of that. And I went up to one of them, and I'm like, hey, how you doing? How you doing? I'm like, see, I'm not such a bad guy. I exist. You know, I'm not just this name on the screen, you know? So,
right.
And that's what you're dealing with. I always felt... in interviewing kids in college, and I don't want to sound old here. I've only been in industry for 11 years, so it's not like I'm, you know, 25 years in the industry. But the social skills, the personal interaction, even though we have social media, it's kind of reverted social skills because it's more electronic social skills than actually social skills.
It's substitutes for it in many ways. I mean, if you could put a nasty comment, like it used to be like flaming on email. It was considered to be, you know, bad netiquette,
cats.
Right?
Yeah,
it was bad netiquette.
Cats.
I love that word, netiquette. And now you have people basically breaking up on Twitter. I mean, you know, I saw, you know, what's the names, frickin' frack there, Jim Carrey and Jenny McCarthy. They mutually broke up on Twitter last night.
Wow. I mean, that's...
it goes by like a circus. You're like, how could you do 5-year relationship, all the things with autism, bip, and it's like, that's it. And right under that, of course, it's going to be the Tiki Barber, you know, intern scandal. It's like so much of this stuff goes by that you cannot emotionally process the meaning and value of, that it all becomes just the next coming attraction of the next movie, and it all just spins. That's why the rumor mills on baseball, the trade
stuff.
They
can't handle it. Have you seen how they can't handle a rumor mill?
It's unbelievably. It's
emotionally
unstable. It's mushroomed to the point that it's almost like what's happened is the background conversations in the fantasy world, which are all rumor mills and things, have become foreground in the blogosphere, which then trickles into the mainstream, and there's no place to put it because it's all what if. There's never reality anymore. There's just a lot of what if, and when you're playing, that's what you're doing with stats. You're playing percentages, and then you try to use the numbers to run the humans, and you can't connect all the dots fast enough because stuff keeps moving. That's
exactly
why if you get a little bit more balance out of it and flip the baseball card over once in a while, and you know that Jeff Francoeur is an eco, and you know certain times of the night there's going to be different shifts physiologically. Get a little back of the physiology, the humanity of the thing. Like K-Rod's in here now in a tie game. He's got two brothers that just had a major car accident, right? So what happens when you have a trauma in your family, you're non-locally connected to all your family members on a biological level, like homing pigeons, right?
Right.
He has to overcome... He has to put that out of his mind and focus here, right? Because one swing of the bat, the game's over, right? Or at least we're losing. Now, if he's sitting in the bullpen and not being used, because they talked about not bringing him in the 7-1 game, and I'm glad they did, because it gets him back into a context that he's unconsciously competent in doing. He's pitching all these years. It gets him out of his head, which, as an eco, he needs to stay out of his head because he's no good in his head. He has to pitch from his gut. So it's not that you want more trauma to happen to the guy, but it's like the perfect funnel for him, just like for Jabba, who's different wiring.
That's a perfect example of what we talked about. Now, they threw stats all this time, and I'm like, just the guy
watch
is not
the guy
wired.
Pitch. If you watch the guy pitch, if you've been watching baseball idly for 10 minutes, you know who's better off coming out of the bullpen and who can handle a harder pitch start. But they don't do that. Like,
I said I don't think the guy's a bright guy, and I validated that also after I said that to some people. It wasn't meant to be cruel. Just listen to a conversation in the media.
Right.
I mean, unless he's playing dumb. The one athlete that's the exception is Derek Jeter, because I don't think anyone knows who Derek Jeter is, and he does that on purpose. He's actually smart, because he's actually playing an act that he doesn't want anybody to know who he really is.
He's an
Which always made me wonder if that's what he's doing. What are you hiding? But that's always my cynicism from my upbringing that goes there.
Well,
that's a whole other story.
There was a commercial a million years ago with him when Steinbrenner was still part of the media,
yes,
so to speak, about him carrying on at night. You'd never see Derek Jeter on Page Six. You never see him anywhere outside the lines. And yet he has this reputation of being this, you know, phenomenal womanizer and all the women. But you never see his relationships played out in the media. He's extremely careful with his image. And that's, by and large, gone by the boards. You have Ocho Cinco basically would broadcast,
sure,
his colorectal exam if he could on Ustream.
I mean, I've even, and you have to be careful with this because, you know, I've always, you know, you see right that you get flamed. I think Erin Andrews and what's been going on is pretty much, she's loving every minute of it.
Oh, my God, she's Dancing with the Stars. If she wanted no attention.
Exactly. I mean, she cried about this stalker. She's on Dancing with the Stars, and now she's got another stalker via email. And, by the way, she's asking for a seven-figure contract from ESPN for
doing
a lot.
Right.
I don't know because I don't get it. But
because you can plop that body and that hair on any sideline at any college football game or basketball game in the country, and she is worth her weight in gold.
And the 80-20, look, it's all 80-20.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about the 80-20 rule. You know, 80% of the people are not going to go to the internet. They're going to be Joe Fan. The other 20% are. You know, I'm really dealing with the other 20%, and 80% are going to fall for that BS. So,
You drive a lot of the 20%ers that are driving eyeballs away from mainstream into social media and into the wireless community. The ringtones, all the stuff that comes out of these little clips where you live, you know, eternally on YouTube, becomes part of the morning rush, you know, part of Carton's fodder every morning. He spends half the time on the internet, you know, during the show. Opie and Anthony were to me, the innovators of that about 8-10 years ago, because they were simulcasting stuff on the web and on the radio before it was even, like, you know, kind of hardwired the way it is now.
Sure.
But,
yeah,
you know, I just think the future, what you're doing, is like, because I really think that satellite radio, by and large, the economy can't really propagate it well right now. I think
the advertisers can't. Either that's the problem with all this stuff. And you're going to look at it from the business side. They have to measure everything. You're in a society that wants to measure everything.
Yeah.
Advertising is the hardest thing to measure. Look, I'm not trying to say I'm the smartest guy in the room and I'm going to debunk Arbitron ratings that have been around for years.
Right, and they're doing that differently.
And Nielsen ratings. But I understand what a Nielsen panel is. My company uses a Nielsen panel. I have been in the process where I've tried to sell somebody on being part of a Nielsen panel for consumer goods, and they said no. And I know the impact of that no and what it did to the number nationwide, and that's why I have to question. That's why I have to question, okay, you know, in an era where the industry needs health in order to sell advertising. And if the one sports station you have in town that's viable isn't healthy, what does that say for the entire industry? So you could look at a pie that's decreasing because, again, without revealing my company, I'm working for a company whose pie is decreasing, but still show a good picture to, in my case, Wall Street, in their case, potential advertisers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a success, but is it really? Because is WFAM prepared to compete for the attention of the future, which is on ESPN New York, which is on Blog Talk Radio, which is on the internet? And my answer is no. And that's my main criticism. And that's what they don't get. And quite frankly, the people running it, and go back and watch Private Parts, because those are the same guys that are running radio right now.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get it 20 years ago when this wasn't around. They sure as hell aren't going to get it, and that's going to be safe at first. There's no way you get them out. Maybe.
What, they give it to them? No.
They're ill prepared, and the only thing they can do is fail. And I asked somebody, and we've talked about this. The biggest thing here is,
mm-hmm,
how can you expect to build an industry, whether it's newspaper or radio, when you ask somebody what's the career path, and the answer is there is none.
Right.
There is none.
Because again, with the corporate mentality like you're talking about, I mean, even in Sirius, I mean, they copied the same pattern. They got in bed with the car industry. Right before the economy collapsed, Right. That was going to be their book. That was going to be the way they were going to get into the market. They were going to get into the car industry, and the car industry goes basically.
And now the government owns it, and you know what that means. That means
right.
They're pretty much done. I mean, they're not. They're actually. They can't even. According to reports, they can't even pay for their pensions if they had to right now. I mean, because that's the scary part. Like, the internet is such a great tool. News, the way it is now, has opened so many eyes, and it really, I will say, when American history is wrote 100 years from now, the difference about this society staying free and staying informed and being different than maybe another country is the internet. Because without it, I think we would certainly have lost. Forget about getting into the politics part. With sports, we'd certainly be in the dark. Let's put it that way. Think about if you didn't have the internet and you just had Francesa, what your perception of sports would be, not just the Mets and everything, versus what reality is. And that's where freedom and information come into play, and that's what makes us better, I think, just as people in general. And but it doesn't make it monetized. So if you can't monetize something and people are doing all this stuff virtually for free, how do you sustain it? That's kind of my question. And, you know, I don't think anyone has the answer. And I asked somebody yesterday, do you really see these blogs sustainable? 5 years from now, will John Doe still be writing about the Mets with that popular blog and making $600 a year in bar money? And he says,
right,
yeah,
right.
because he loves it. How long does that last?
I don't think so.
Like
I said, I think largely because of Facebook and some other platforms, you don't need a blog. You know, Sarah Palin has a career on Facebook at this point. She got herself a job on Fox basically being an opinion maker on Facebook. So,
ultimately, that's where these guys are going to either go or not go. Or they're going to go to ESPN, who has this new blog network that nobody's getting paid for.
Right.
My question is,
why would ESPN pay them? If they're going to do it for free out of their passion, they'll take advantage of it. Sure.
Well, I mean, it's kind of exploitative. I'm sure none of them. Are they out of the inning? Yeah. Barajas, as long as he doesn't drop it, he should be fine. You have to ask yourself, okay, how long can you do something out of passion? Like, I've got a timeline on my project here. You know, maybe I'll always I could never see it not existing, because I think it's a good outlet to network and kind of get that left side, right side of the brain into different modes, because you're not going to get all that at work. But life eventually forces you to make decisions, and the decision is the time I'm putting in versus the return, and the return has to be money. And that's a dirty word in the whole thing.
That's something, like I said, that because of the fact that there's so much at stake when you see the first 5 minutes of that fantasy of the movie, how much money is made in that industry on the sweat and on the obsession of other people compared, and they're putting out most of the content, by the way, and somebody else is cashing in on it. That's why I think your site, and we haven't given it out here on the air, it's NewYorkBaseballDigest.com, and you're on, I think, three times a week on Blog Talk plus the WGBB show on Sunday nights.
Yeah, just go to the site. I'm kind of like all over the place with the podcast.
Yeah.
Usually Sunday's the day I do it. It's pretty much a replay audience.
It's like it's become podcast radios. Everyone's figured out that live listenership, because like TiVo, you don't have to be here live. If you like the show, you can listen to it whenever. It's on iTunes. You just it's there in the morning when you're going to work. It's better than Carton in the morning. Believe me, I listen to your show. I listen to the replays of your show between 8 and 10 more than him. And all the interactivity of it, like I said, I think your unique, what I call a brand, or your unique approach, a way of putting the information out, is that you reduce it to, and I hate that people in sports probably don't like to hear this, but you reduce it to entertainment, so that there's a separation between what is a game and what is life. And so it's like you don't get in over your head with the geeks and the gossip hounds. Well, you will engage with them, but you know it'd be like a conversation you'd have coming in on the LIRR, going to the city. It's like you go up the train, hey, have a nice day, goodbye, and it's out of your head. Where these guys are constantly feeding off this stuff like catnip all day long, and I think your service to people is to remind them, hey, it's just a game. Raise your family. Pay your mortgage. Shut up. You know.
Yeah. Exactly.
And
I mean, it's more important things. And those guys that you're talking about, they have those problems too. They forget that. They're not a Stratomatic card. David Wright is not a Stratomatic card.
They've become completely absorbed into that world, thinking that there's a carrot in there for them, and they're going to be Matt Cerrone, and they're going to be Joe Beningo and get you know, uplifted from Saddle River and become a talk show
person. If you could ever capsulize this show and just take one 30-second clip and give it to a future journalism radio student, there, these companies, SNY, WFAN, yes, they're not equipped for you to put all your eggs in their basket. That's the one message I would make. I learned that not the hard way because I didn't engage. My foot's not all in. My foot's half in and half out, and some people think that's a bad thing too. But unfortunately, when at the end of the month when I have to pay bills, they're not going to be able to pay on my passion.
No.
Just like corporate America wants me to be paid in titles, that doesn't get cashed in at the bank either. I can't get paid on passion either. You have to kind of put one foot one in. So, you know, if you're banking on these guys, to the industry to change, you know, you almost have to force your way through the door with them. I mean, that's reality. And, you know, that's what Matt did. And what Matt did is the exception, not the rule. I mean, that's
yeah, and I still think, like I said, your place in that universe isn't on that level of trying to contest them and sort of beat them at their own game. And it's much more at a pedestrian level where you're dealing with the alumni players who don't get taken care of, and you're dealing with the charities all over the place that don't get enough light because they're not properly funded and things like that, and dealing with the strife of with the Long Island Ducks and their whole league goes through to get attendance up to compete for the family dollar. It's that part of baseball that still is baseball. It still has that feel to it. It isn't gonna, it isn't a $300 night out for two people or whatever. Or Yankee Stadium. A guy was telling me last night at my dinner, local pizza parlor over here, his grandfather. He brought basically his grandsons and a couple of his friends $1,000 for a Yankee game.
Wow.
One game. He couldn't
believe
it.
That's somebody
people
aren't getting
that
paycheck. That's a week's.
Yeah.
For some people, that's more than a week's salary. I mean, that's,
yeah. And it's like is that,
I do okay, and I wouldn't be able to plunk $1,000 down to go to a ball game.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be worth it, not for a regular season game anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
not with
a good HDTV anyway. I'm having.
And they weren't even sitting downstairs. I mean, this was just buying souvenirs and parking and everything else and tickets.
That's what happens when you have a $200 million payroll too. Let's go.
Yeah,
that
but that's like I said. That's where I said that's one of the reasons why that this association and all the other things going on. You bring like an independent voice that isn't obligated, like we said before, to create a message that fits the group think of that, whatever the four letters
right.
is over your head, and that's what's going to keep you fresh and independent and viable going forward. And I think, like I said, the monetizing part of it is going to be on the 501c angle, on the charity golf tournaments, on the alumni card things. That's going to keep these guys basically alive, so to speak, in the consciousness of the fan bases for 10, 15, 20 years after they retire, because not all of them are going to be Hernandez and Darling and get announcer jobs.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
they're going to be, Billy Wagner, not for nothing, but once he hangs him up, he's not the most loquacious guy in the world. Tim Tuffle, for all of his, he got back in the system out of nowhere, and your boy Wally Backman, too.
It took him, and let me tell you, it's not easy. Not easy.
No.
I mean, people think, Wally's a bad example because of what happened with him.
Dykstra, too.
I've talked to former players who have, interview, and they're like, I'm looking to get back in the game. Do you know anybody? And I felt like saying, dude, if you're talking to me, shit, you're in trouble, man. You know, like
who's the guy who was telling me a couple of years ago that called the Mets and they said thanks but no thanks, guy?
Yeah. I think the story went. I think it was Ken Boswell wanted to.
69 Mets. Yeah.
Just go say hi to the team in the clubhouse, and the Mets are like, sorry. It's like you want to ring with them,
Yeah. I mean, one of two that they
had another member of a championship team say he tried to, he wanted to just go in the clubhouse one last time before they tore down Shea, and security treated him like, he was the Unabomber trying to get on an airplane. I mean,
that's because if they don't know baseball, they don't know those guys, just like a lot of the contemporary guys don't know who Jackie Robinson is,
Yeah.
And we get kind of cynical, and again, that's our little club, too. That's our little elitist club. But
right.
I look at that as, like, to me, that's the last vestige of what was there, and now I don't know what's there anymore. There's a big type corporate ethos that everyone wants to be, Gary Vaynerchuk and own the Jets, and they just never stop promoting themselves. Where you have, you have a check and balance to it that you might overflow on the air one night. You might get passionate about this game or that game or this event or that event. But when you hang up the phone, you become Mike Silver, just walking around. There isn't that aura like Francesa has, where the callers call him and he just treats them basically like the flies at the picnic.
It's not that, and that's
very
how look. And I'm and this sounds self-deprecating, but that's that I see that in corporate America. I have the same problem, you know. But just because I have a manager next to my name doesn't mean I can't sit at a table with someone who's a level below me and have lunch. That doesn't mean I have to wear a jacket to say I'm important. That doesn't mean I'm in the trenches like everyone else. And it's just a perspective, and people, believe me, people feel that that mentality that you're describing goes, you know, hurts you too because you don't separate yourself. You don't, you know,
oh, yeah,
at next level. But I, you know, I didn't grow up like that. I hated people like that. And, you know, I do believe if you have a plan and a vision and idea and you work hard at it and work smart, that eventually something's got good's got to happen. I still believe in the NYBD idea, whether it's that name or that form or what have you. You know, that's to be debated. You know, that can be debated.
Like I said, I think that you're going to get a lot more play as the phoniness kind of falls away and fills the sky. At a certain point, someone's going to get sick of fantasy and want reality, and you've been there all the time. So thanks for staying overtime on
it. No problem, man.
We're going to try and get a win here in the ninth inning. I'll let you go watch that piece. And thanks for joining us here in Summertime. Great show, and I'll see you on your air soon. And have
a
good night.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Mark. You too. Take care.
Take care. All right. Wow. That was as deep as it gets. He was evoking the Renaissance there. All right. So I'm going to see if I can wrap it up here and watch the ninth inning in peace myself. That we've exhausted that topic in a good way. That was how I listened back to my own show. We said a lot of stuff there. So here's my little dedication here to Tiger. You might remember this movie, you pre-internet people.
Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere to lead the pack. At Augusta, he's on his final hole. He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think. Boy, you got all of that. The crowd is standing on its feet here at Augusta, the normally reserved Augusta crowd, going wild for this young Cinderella who's come out of nowhere. He's got about 350 yards left. He's going to hit about a 5-iron, I expect, don't you think? He's got a beautiful backswing. He got all of that one. He's got to be pleased with that. The crowd is just on its feet here. He's a Cinderella boy. Tears in his eyes, I guess, as he lines up this last shot. He's got about 195 yards left, and looks like he's got about an 8-iron. This crowd is going deadly silent. Cinderella story, out of nowhere. A former greenskeeper now about to become the Masters champion. It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Hey, young fella, I was hoping to score.
No truer words were spoken when it comes to Tiger. That's right. And now to bookend that, I will play you a clip, a mashup of Mike Francesa's Wait a Second. There you go. Sports Talk, circa 2010.
But you know that
wait a second,
Wait a second.
Oliver Perez has won 15 games before.
Sure. Going through
wait a second. Wait a second.
Peter throw
hey.
The ball on
wait a second. Wait a second. Wait a second. Wait a second. I didn't say Steve Phillips. Wait a second. How are they a bad team? Wait a second.
Let's say things in black and white.
Oh, come on. Wait a second. No, wait a second. No, wait a second. That wait a second. You're ridiculous. You want to know whether he's having an affair. That's all you care about. Wait a second.
Time. And as James Brown says, well, James Brown's not going to say anything yet because I have to get my dopey Napster working here. Boy. The patience of Solomon I have to exercise here as my multimedia presentation tanks on me. But still got a tie ball game here in Flushing. We started off with a clunker, and we might end up with a classic. Yankees, I think, won. I don't even want to look. Rangers are going Friday night, so get your hockey eyes out Friday night for those filthy Phillies Flyers. Out of that. Let's see if I can get James to play us out here. We'll see you here next Wednesday night, 9 p.m. sharp, for another edition of Summer Time. Thanks to Mike Silver from New York Baseball Digest. Again, visit my dopey site at summerspace.org. It's evolving. It is evolving. Mets with one on and one out. Tie ball game. See what happens. Till then, everybody, travel light through the darkness. Be yourself and be well. Oh, James, where are we? Yeah.